Hi, this is Kate. Just before you listen to this next episode, I wanted to let you know about an opportunity with Amicable. As you may know, we're thrilled about the upcoming historic change in the divorce law, and I know that for many of you too, this has been a long time coming. So if you are waiting for the introduction of the no-fault system, and you're happy to share your story with others, then please get in touch with Amicable today. We're looking for couples who are happy to talk to the media about this seismic change in the law. Please contact us no later than the 24th of March using the email address hello@amicable.co.uk. Thanks very much. Enjoy this next episode. Welcome to the Divorce Podcast, a podcast that aims to address divorce, separation and co-parenting here in the UK, countering the often sensationalist way it's portrayed in the media, challenging the status quo and driving for reform. On each episode, I'm joined by experts to discuss divorce, separation and co-parenting from different angles and to give their opinions and to debate them. I'm Kate Daly, a relationship counsellor and divorce coach, co-founder of Amicable, the divorce services company, and host of this, the Divorce Podcast. In this episode, I was joined by Laura Friedman Williams and James Priest. Laura is the mother of three children and author of recently published book Available, a very honest account of life after divorce, which has been a number one bestseller on Amazon and is featured in the Financial Times, Cosmopolitan, Vogue, and the Daily Mail. James is one of the UK's leading dating experts and dating coaches. He's regularly featured in The Independent, Cosmopolitan, Men's Health and The Guardian. He's also an official dating spokesman for the UK government and the author of 15 best-selling dating books. This episode is all about sex and dating after divorce. It's a little bit racy in parts as we look at why Laura thinks that being single again after divorce is a gift and an opportunity to have sex with confidence and lots of different people. We discuss James's tips on how to use dating apps safely and how different genders approach sex after divorce and separation. I certainly learnt a lot, as you will hear. Who knew about the third date rule? And I will warn you that this episode contains sexual references, so you might want to listen out of earshot of any children. If you really loved this episode or want to hear more episodes like this, then please make sure to rate us on your preferred listening platform. Enjoy the episode. Welcome, James, and welcome, Laura.
Thank you.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm really good, thank you. I've had a really good day, and I'm feeling very positive.
Excellent. Hello, Laura. How are you?
I mean, I'm not that excited, but I'm going to catch up to James. Now, challenge taken.
That's excellent. Well, it's brilliant. It's a lovely sunny Tuesday afternoon as we record this, and we're going to be talking about sex, dating, and what happens when you do sex and dating after a long marriage. So I'm really excited about this one. I wonder if we could start, Laura, by just talking a little bit about your book and the research you did. How typically did people or do people describe their married sex lives?
Unfortunately, I think for the most part, people who have been in long marriages, almost universally, the women I spoke with, and even some of the men, felt that the sex was very humdrum, sort of basic, boring, more of a chore. There were people who were still had satisfying sex lives, but I'd say they were really in the minority. I think that the sameness of being with one partner over a long time, and also the addition of children or busy careers, really, you know, threw most couples a curveball. And even interestingly, recently I was speaking to a woman who said that she has had a really hard time. She just can't have sex with her husband. It's physically painful for her. And I said, well, maybe you need to speak to your doctor about it. You know, maybe it's hormonal. And she said, no, because when I look at other men, I feel fine. So, right. You know, I think it's hard. I think it's hard in a long marriage to sustain the excitement, you know, to keep having sex with the same partner.
And James, so do you think that sex is a causal factor to the breakdown of a marriage, or is it a consequence of a relationship breaking down?
That's a great question. Now, every situation will be different, but I do find it all comes down to attention. If someone doesn't feel that they are getting there, ego stroked, shall we say, or they're not feeling good or made to feel that they're wanted anymore, they will look for it elsewhere and they will crave that attention. So in many cases, as Laura said, children will come along and the partner stops being the main focus, the priority. And that can be hard, especially if they've been very, very close and very intimate and having lots of sex until that point. So I think it can be a problem, but many couples do work it through. But for some people, it is the beginning of the end and they will either look for it elsewhere or they will look to separate.
Mm. It sounds almost like there's an inevitability, though, about being in a long-term relationship and having children. Laura, what separates people that can navigate that versus people who are going to really suffer and their relationships will break down as a consequence?
I think the awareness of it. You know, in my own marriage, I think I was incredibly, you know, actually, I don't want to say I was unaware. I knew that there was an issue. We continued to have sex and our sex was fine. It wasn't exciting and new, but it wasn't terrible. I think it was satisfying for both of us, but it became scheduled. You know, we were so busy and we had kids in and out of our bed all the time and he worked late all the time. So I finally said, you know what, let's have sex on Wednesdays and Saturdays because the pressure on me all the time to have sex with you is just overwhelming to me. I hate feeling like I can't get into bed and be comfortable because you're going to expect me to have sex with you. So let's just put it on the calendar. It's every Wednesday and Saturday. And I thought that was really generous of me, two nights a week. And then I lowered it to one. Then it became Saturday nights only. But one thing I did always used to say to him was, you know, it's very hard. I'm exhausted because you don't help me enough with the kids. You don't help me with the housework. So I just want to be untouched when I get into bed at night. I'm tired. I've had kids hanging off of me all day and I want to be left alone. And if you could help pick up the slack, I'd probably be much more excited. And so I think there are couples who realize that the marriage and the parenting has to be a partnership. And I think that those couples are able to overcome the difficulties of staying, you know, sexually connected. Whereas in my marriage, we just couldn't, we were not talking about it enough. I knew it was a problem and I kept saying, I need help, but it didn't register. I didn't say it in the ways that he could hear me. So I think communication, awareness, and genuine partnership probably really, you know, can keep your sex life much happier.
So just before we move on to like dating after the relationship is broken down, James, I just wanted to bring you in on that point. So Laura's given kind of the female perspective of, I've just had enough. I've had kids hanging off of me all day. I don't want to be touched. What's a man hearing or feeling when that's going on in a relationship?
Well, I can understand why somebody, first of all, might want to schedule having sex to a certain time each week. But that, of course, does kill the romance and it stops it being spontaneous and it becomes forced. So for a guy's perspective, if you know you have to perform at a certain time every week, when the clock hits a certain time, that can put a lot of pressure on you and it stops being fun. So that's the first thing that I would say. And secondly, it is communication. It is having a conversation about what we're going to do and trying to work out how best to fit it in. But I think it needs to be some sort of variety, because if you're trying to do it at the same time every week, it just becomes very, very dull and very boring. Then you start doing the same positions for the same length of time and it becomes a routine. And when it becomes a routine, it becomes a chore. And for a guy, you want to do it when you feel like it, really, which can be every day, every month. It depends. Every guy is different. But I absolutely take on board the fact that people are very, very tired nowadays. We work long jobs. We have children getting in the way. The pandemic has not helped because everyone feels much more tired and everyone's been ill. So it is a big, big problem. But ultimately, communication, as it is to everything, is the secret and the key to solving this.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like the loud and clear message from both of you, clear communication, is what's going to help with this kind of stuff. So, Laura, just thinking about it, you've said in your book, I think, or you've previously described that being single at 50 was kind of the greatest gift that you had. So you've gone from a relationship where you were still having sex, you were still functioning. What happened between the breakdown of the relationship and then this gift of being single again?
I got to reinvent myself. And I think part of what's hard also, I agree with everything James said about the lack of spontaneity and the schedule and the sort of lack of romance. I think that when sex becomes a chore, it does really transform what sex feels like. And so it had 100% become that for me. I don't know if I didn't feel that I had to have sex, like to keep my husband you know, happy and satisfied. I don't know if I would have ever had it. Mostly I just wanted to go into, you know, bed and read a book. And then suddenly I was given this chance to be someone else. And part of it, I think, is that because my husband and I met when we were so young, we were 20 years old, we really had grown up together. And I think that we became so set in our pattern, in our routines, that I was very shy about ever trying on any kind of persona that was not something I had exhibited in the past 27 years together. So that was really a problem for me. Now, when I was suddenly 47 and single, I realized I could be whoever I wanted to be. I wasn't shy at all. I felt it was almost like acting. It was like, okay, I'm going to be wild and free with somebody and I'm going to see how it feels. And I realized that without having any expectations of myself or other people having expectations of me, I truly blossomed. I didn't know that I had such a strong sex drive. I didn't know that I loved having sex. And I did. So I think that was the gift, was that I got to have a totally fresh partner. Well, partners. And I got to be fresh myself. I got to be who I wanted to be without anyone expecting anything of me.
It sounds to you like it was an easy and positive transition. I wonder, James, is it always that straightforward, or do people bring anxieties and nervousness to going from having a long-term partner to being able to rediscover sex with a new or several new partners?
I think for some of my female clients in particular, they will come to me and they're excited to try something new. They've been holding this back for too long. They've always been fantasizing about new partners and being free and making up for lost time quite a lot of the time, to be honest. Maybe they haven't been having sex or having sex with someone they weren't particularly in love with anymore. But the opposite of this is people do have anxieties. They are nervous about their body. They haven't shown it to anyone else for quite some time. So they have body hang-ups, they can get body dysmorphia. They are just nervous in general about what they need to do because they may know how to please their partner, but how do they please the next person and vice versa? Because we get into routines and we get into ruts and we get into certain patterns when we're in relationships. So you have to form new ones. So for a lot of people, it can be very nerve-wracking, but it is something that you can look forward to as long as you find the right partner or partners to do it with.
That sounds like, you know, you're waiting until you've established a relationship with people. But Laura, did you always have a relationship with the people you were having sex with, or were you just going out and having sex with people you had no relationship with?
I did the latter. I definitely was not in a relationship with anybody for quite some time. I do remember that the point that James makes about, you know, feeling like your body, you know, you're presenting yourself. The first night that I had sex with another man, it was a one-night stand. I met him at a bar. And it was like, I remember being a teenager and wanting to lose my virginity. And it was the same feeling of like, I have to do this. I have to rip off this Band-Aid. I have to see what this is going to be like. I might run out terrified. I might go back to my husband. I really don't know. Like anything could happen. And I was also thinking, well, honestly, like no one has seen my body. You know, it's been 27 years, except for my like obstetrician and gynecologist and my husband. I've given birth three times. I've nursed three babies. I don't even know if things are where they're supposed to be anymore. And so when I had sex for the first time and a man, he complimented me on my parts, I was stunned. And I thought, okay, I think I'm okay now. I've gotten the okay. I think I can carry on with this. And then I just decided I'm going to just have one night stands. I'm not going to try to have a relationship. I didn't have the mental capacity for relationship. And I really was enjoying just the freedom of being able to have uncommitted sex with people. I was safe. You know, I was very committed to having safe sex, but I felt very free. And I was not looking for a relationship, which they kind of worked in tandem to allow me to be free. So I know it's scary, but I also found, and James can maybe speak to this more, I found that men were not quite as discerning or fussy about my body as I thought they would be. Like most men were just really happy to be having sex. They didn't care about the things that I cared about. So I let it go. And it was really just practice. You know, I kept having sex with different men until I realized none of them cared that my boobs were saggy. None of them cared that my stomach seemed kind of crepe-like when I was on top. Like, no one cared. So I stopped caring too.
Oh, go on, James. I'm going to leave that wide open for you. So that apparently men have laced the bars quite low.
That is sadly quite true. Now, I want to say one very quick thing. Due to the nature of my job, I do tend to talk about sex in relationships, but that's what I do. But I do fully understand, and I do think it's a great idea if you're newly single, if you want to get out of your system and you want to run free and do anything you want to do, go and do it. Life is too short. That's my first thing I'm going to say. The second thing is, you're right, men just don't really care. They're thinking, can they get it up? Really? Are they going to perform? How are they going to get it on? They're worried about their bodies and their dad bods. Maybe they're letting themselves go over the years, not sure how things are going to go. Most people aren't completely confident, but they just get on with it. And that's part of the fun. And it's part of being vulnerable that makes it interesting as well.
Okay. What about sort of, you know, the safety aspects of this? So, Laura, you say, you know, you literally went to a bar, you picked up a man, a one night stand, you went back. James, are there things that we need to consider? And is there a safe place to go for those one night stands? Are there apps and things that set up one night stands for people if that's what you want to go and do? Or is it more around forming a relationship and then waiting? And you know, what's the situation out there? Can you go out and do what Laura was able to do safely?
You absolutely can. There are so many opportunities, many more opportunities than there used to be. Any sort of app, any dating app, like Tinder, is going to allow that if you want it. There is always someone looking for that. There are events you can go to. There are special apps. Killing Kittens, for example, is a great company that I recommend a lot. They do lots of sex parties, dating events, all things like that. And the app is all aimed at people that are open-minded enough to want to give that a go. But yes, safety is ultimately the most important thing. I would never recommend just hooking up with someone randomly on a dating app and going to their place or allowing them to come to yours until you've got to know them a bit better. Because you don't know who they are. They could be anyone. They could be the Tinder swindler, for all you know. They could be anyone. So you're going to be really, really careful and tell people where you're going to go. If you're going to go and meet them, have a drink with them first. That's really important in a bar, in a public place. And there is no obligation. Make sure you're not, you don't feel obliged to have sex with someone you don't want to. Because I actually interviewed someone on my podcast recently who is very free and writes about this and talks about it on her own podcast, her sexual adventures. And so that sometimes she meets people and she gets completely catfished and they end up in a hotel room together and it's not the person she thought they were. And she still goes through with it because she feels obliged. So never feel obliged and don't get yourself in the situation where you're going to feel you want to do that. Make sure that you're comfortable, not too drunk, and enjoy the moment. But absolutely, safety has to come into this.
And Laura, did you feel safe? You know, when you did you take people back to your place? Did you have children at home when you took people back? Tell us a little bit about how that whole, you know, you're a mum, you've got kids, presumably they're at your house sometimes. How did that all of that work from your perspective? And what were the sort of the joys and the pitfalls of navigating that?
Never with my kids. No, I would never. I mean, to be honest with you now, I've been single for 4 years. I've been dating the same man for over 3 years now. And I still don't really, I think one night he slept over because it just the way it worked out. He slept over when my kids were home only once. And that was recently. I feel a very strong divide. I don't want my kids to be confused by what's happening or to have to see it. I mean, then again, I wrote a book about my sex life. So they know it's happening. You know, they're not reading it, but they understand that this is part of my life. But I didn't want them to ever feel uncomfortable in their own home. That was my number one priority. So I usually didn't have anybody come back to my home unless I had been on a few dates with them or felt a certain level of comfort. I did go back to their homes or a hotel after having a drink with them or having dinner or coffee, something where I felt comfortable. And, you know, I can't say I always made the best decisions. In hindsight, I think there were times where I probably should have been more cautious. And there's one time in particular where I did end up in a very uncomfortable situation. And I had sex with a man because I did feel obliged, as James said. And I regret it. It's the one time I had sex that was not fun or free or empowering. Mm-hmm. It was the opposite. But it was a real wake-up call to me because he kind of lured me back to his apartment. He sort of tricked me. It was like a little bit of a bait and switch. And I was so worried about looking like I didn't know what I was doing. I was so aware of the fact that I was newly single and very inexperienced. I felt like such an amateur and I was always trying to look like really confident and like I had agency. And so I didn't say no to going back to his apartment, even though I felt really uncomfortable. And I hadn't, we were supposed to have coffee out in the neighborhood. And then he sort of, we ended up back at his house before doing that. And then I felt obligated to sleep with him. I felt like, well, what was I doing here? Why am I here? And now he's making moves on me. I have to go through with it. And it was really upsetting, the situation. I didn't tell any of my friends. I was very ashamed. And I made sure never to be in that position again. And I learned that I'm not obligated. So even though it was scary and upsetting, I also really learned a lot from it. And it did empower me in the end, because I understood I can say yes or no. Like, that's one thing. I don't care if a man thinks I'm a tease or whatever. If I get back to his house and I don't want to have sex with him, I'm not going to have sex with him. That's honestly never happened to me. I always want to have sex with them.
But knowing that you don't have to, that's the key though, isn't it? And it kind of, like, I can remember being like that as a sort of in my young 20s before I started having serious relationships. And the idea that that could still happen in your 50s is kind of a little bit scary, I have to say.
It's common. I mean, I've spoken to a lot of women in this position. And I think the point is, like, first of all, don't drink too much. You know, I like to have a cocktail, but you need to be aware and smart, you know, and trust your instincts. I think all of the things that we would tell our children are the same things we need to do for ourselves.
I'd like to add something, sorry, as well to that, that if you are in the situation where you feel that you don't want to have sex with them and you don't feel comfortable, it is much better to grab your things, walk out and leave and risk the slight embarrassment that you might feel temporarily than to put yourself in a situation where you're going to regret it afterwards. So that's my sensible head on, as we say. But yeah.
That's good advice, because you always think, why don't I just do that? And sometimes you're frozen in the moment, aren't you? But yes, you can always just pick up and leave. But are there better ways of navigating this then, James? So how do you, when you're coaching people, how do you start that conversation about sex? Or is it not a conversation you have to start to something? Do you just know that it's the right time? Or how does that all work?
Sometimes women do misunderstand the male mind a little bit, because I think men are hunters. Men will always go for what they want, and men will often try and get women to bed as fast as they can. No matter what they say, if they want a long-term relationship, they will still try and do that. But I think if you say to them, I'm not quite ready for that yet, but I'm really enjoying getting to know you, most men will then take a step back and they'll take their time with it. So don't dismiss men immediately if they try and get you into bed, because men just want that. They want the easy result, don't they? The quickest result they can get. Get straight, skip the dating, go straight to the sex. So don't judge men. But if men don't take no for an answer, then get rid of them straight away. That's not a good sign for a long-term relationship. But I find most people do bring it up relatively quickly after a couple of dates. And there's almost expectations that the third date is going to be the time. And I set no rules on this in particular, because I think if you want to have sex on the first date, you should do it. Life is too short. But really, the best thing, maybe the third date is a good idea. It's the most common. But if you're not ready by 15 dates, then don't do it. There is no time scale on this. If you don't feel comfortable even holding their hand or kissing them on a first, second, third, 100th date, don't do it. Do what you feel comfortable with. But generally, it tends to be if you invite them back to yours to cook for them or vice versa, it tends to be the most common thing at the moment, then that's an expectation that you're going to have sex. So people don't always understand that. They think, I'm just doing a nice thing. I've offered to cook for him, or she's going to cook for me. Really, if you're going around there one evening and you're on your own, the kids are out, the expectation is going to be there that you're going to get it on. So if you don't want that, don't invite them back to yours and don't go to theirs in that situation. But if you do, relax and enjoy it.
Okay, now I'm really glad we're not doing this visually, because my mouth is hanging open. I had no idea. And I'm slightly screaming inside as well. Third date, and if I invite back for cooking, well, just thinking I could easily invite people back for cooking without thinking that that would be the expectation. So, wow, what do I know? Okay, well, that's...
I wouldn't have known that either. I actually have never heard that articulated so clearly. I didn't...
Neither have I, and I'm really glad you're on talking to us about this, because it's like having a translator.
That's what I do, unfortunately. Yeah.
Fortunately. So, Laura, your book is full of tales of rediscovering sex after divorce. Tell us what it's like when you've gone from having a sexual relationship with somebody who you've been seeing for, you know, been in a relationship with for like 27 years, I think you said. What are the key changes when you're going to a new relationship? What's different about it? What new things do you have to navigate that you haven't had to perhaps think about when you've been in a long-term relationship? What surprised you?
I think what surprised me was genuinely just how much I enjoyed having sex. because it had become such a routine in my marriage. And I guess I had liked it like back when I was single, but it had been, you know, as you say, 27 years. It was a long time. It was before I had kids and when I was a very young woman. And now I was in midlife. And I think that it was a surprise to me how strong and free I felt in my body and how in control I felt. And I actually, what was really surprising to me was that I was often the one that was like more of the aggressor than the men were. Like a lot of times they wanted to wait. And I was like, seriously? I kind of wanted to know sometimes if we had sexual compatibility. And I started to, because I was having so much sex, because I was starting to learn the language for it. So the very first man I slept with, he complimented me on my pussy, on my lovely pussy. And I turned 18 shades of red and like started cackling. And he didn't understand what was so funny. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I just didn't know men actually talked like this. Sorry. And I had to learn. I learned over time. It took me, you know, many men before I became comfortable with my, really comfortable with my body, really comfortable with the language around sex. And, you know, when you do something a lot, you can start to see it a little differently. And so for me, I start to see everybody likes having sex. Almost everybody likes having sex. I lost the shame with it. And I didn't expect that. I didn't know that I assigned shame to sex at this point in my life as a 47-year-old mother of three. But I had been having a very specific kind of sex with one man, you know, who was the father of my children. And now I'm a single woman. And I decided I'm single. I'm on this mission to sleep with as many people as I can to learn about myself and learn about men and learn about midlife. And I don't feel ashamed anymore. I suddenly feel just empowered. Like everybody wants to be having sex. Why do we feel embarrassed about it? Why can't we talk about it? Why can't we just be open about it? And it completely transformed the way that I talked about it, the way I felt about it, the things that I was willing to try. And so even now, you know, that I've been with somebody for 3 years, it's not monotonous. It's not routine. I think that we always, you know, we talk. We just communicate really well. And I'm not embarrassed anymore. I'm not embarrassed to say the words. I'm not embarrassed to try new things. I feel so free. So I think that's really, you know, you can get there. I want to say, it's very important for me to note this. This was not who I was in my married life. I was very buttoned up. I was, you know, when my husband was very open about sex and he would talk about it with people and I would be like, don't talk about that. Like, that's embarrassing. Yeah. You don't have to talk about that.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like I was like running around or very free. So the transformation I had started from a place of real sort of prudishness around sex. Mm. And so it's not like you're taking a woman who was super confident and strong in her sex life and just building on that. It was the opposite. So I want women to know that, so that if they're in a starting place, they know it's possible.
I think a lot of the time as well, you may start off confident in your 20s and 30s, you then marry and you have your kids. And I think over a period of time, that confidence becomes eroded. So sometimes it's about rediscovering, you know, yourself, isn't it, as well? And I'm really interested in you talk about the language and saying that the important thing is to get the language. And James, do you think men and women speak the same language around sex? Or is there a divide?
It's completely different the way men and women do this, because men don't really think it through. They want to do it spontaneously when they feel like it, that particular second. There's no conversation around this with many couples. Of course, if you have to plan it and you've got to be routine, then it will be planned. But for many guys, it's about love languages in itself. There's different types of love languages that we have. And people can have the same love language or different ones. But when it comes to sex, men don't really have, we're not talking about the conversations about will they have sex. These are the conversations in general life, aren't they? About how we get on, how we communicate, how we care for each other, how we display love in general to them, how we act when there's bad times as well as good times. These are all the types of communication and the languages that we have that form good sex in the end. It's not about talking dirty or what we're going to be saying in that moment. It's the bigger picture. And if couples can do that, then it's going to be a great sex life.
Yeah. But is there anything specific about how you approach the topic of sex in terms of when you're at the beginning of a relationship? Are there definite yeses and nos for how you have that conversation between the two of you from a male and female perspective, do you think? It feels like women are quite hesitant. And like I think Laura was saying, you know, you can be quite embarrassed or you might be carrying shame. Is that the same for men and women? Do we just have to get over ourselves? Or is there a different way that we approach sex in a gendered way?
There is. I think men have become more fearful about actually doing this because of the best word ever, which is consent. And absolutely have to support that. But men are nervous now. Men are nervous at making a move that's going to be rebutted, rejected and refused, or they're upsetting someone by mistake. So men are quite nervous. They will only make a move now or suggest it or bring it up when they really feel confident, when things have escalated to that stage when they're ready. This is most guys. I think 70% of men now are more nervous than they were maybe 3 or 4 years ago, which is a good thing, really, but it does help you along the way. But it damages confidence as well because it makes it a bit more nerve-wracking. It's very much like when we're teenagers, we say, well, what are we going to do now? Are we going to plan this? But I think when people do have their first time together as a couple, they will know that's coming. Maybe they've planned a weekend away. Maybe they know they will be staying over. And the conversation has been had. It's not as simple as just saying, we're going to have sex on this time and don't forget your toothbrush, that sort of thing. It will be implied you'll both know, you'll both feel comfortable and safe and the moment will be right. And by that stage, you'd have kissed, you'd have held hands and maybe done other things by that stage. But really, it's just part of the natural flow. And the more you overthink it and the more you do try and plan it, have a conversation about it, the more pressure you put on each other and it's not going to be fun.
It's interesting what you say about that sort of male reticence. Now, I notice in the media or when you watch dramas or films and things, there's a lot more "can I kiss you" going on than ever there was before. In the old days, Rhett Butler would sweep up, I can't remember her name, in her arms and just snog her, wouldn't he? And you don't see that anymore. You see the permission seeking way, way more. And it's quite interesting because I hadn't really thought about that, having, you know, not being in that situation for quite so long, and definitely post the sort of Me Too stuff. So yeah, I imagine it's probably quite a minefield, isn't it? But from both sides now, I feel like you've got to walk around with your toothbrush and your spare pair of knickers in your bag just in case anytime after the third date. I don't know.
Maybe. I always used to anyway. I always had a spare pair of contact lenses in my pocket just in case that happens. Many years ago now, of course.
In my 30s, I used to walk around with my passport in my bag just so I knew I could just go to the airport if I wanted to. I had clearly very high expectations.
But in case you have to run.
Oh, my goodness. Look, it's been absolutely fascinating chatting to you both. Thank you so much for your time. We're at the end. Laura, is there any kind of top tips you would give people if they're out there on the cusp, standing on the edge of going back out there and having sex after a divorce or separation from a long-term partner?
I think, honestly, just do it. Get out of your head and do it. As James said, don't overthink it. You know, I'm an overthinker. I really am. But I think that I was so desperate to find joy again in my life in the aftermath of the very sudden rupture of my marriage that I knew that I had to just kind of jump. I'm not a person who jumps. I don't jump into cold water. You know, I don't jump from bungee cords. I don't jump, but I did this time because I felt I needed to find my way there. And I think just don't worry. Don't worry so much. Nobody's going to dissect your body and your performance the way you're going to. They're worrying about themselves. So I would say get out of your head and just enjoy it. If there's something that brings you joy in a life that is otherwise kind of hard, just go with it and don't overthink it.
That's great advice. It sounds like rip the Band-Aid off.
Yeah, it's all it is. You just got to do it. You know, it's like the only way to have sex for the first time after a marriage is to have sex for the first time after a marriage any time. Yeah. Just do it. And I think if you do it and you can take something positive from it, you'll think, okay, I could do that again.
Yeah. And James, what about you? What would you say from the other side of it?
I completely agree with Laura. I think one of the biggest regrets people have over the age of 40 is not having enough sex with different people, ultimately. Because when you get into a new relationship again, which could be 3 weeks, 3 months, 3 years, then you're with that person again, if you want to, for the rest of your life. So make the most of opportunities now. Otherwise, you're going to regret it and look back and say, oh, I wasted that time that I had. Rather than moping around thinking, I'm not going to meet someone, I can't get naked in front of someone else, go and do it, but do it safely. And when I say safely, I mean in every sense of the word. Do it safely. You're not hurting anyone. You are bringing two people together and having fun. It is the most natural thing in the world. We're all supposed to be doing it as much as we can. So go out there and enjoy it. And the same is true of dating. If you're not dating now, you're moping around thinking, I'm never going to meet someone. What do I do? Go out there, start dating, go on a dating site, go to a dating event and get the ball rolling. And once you do, you're on the way, your journey begins.
Very good advice. And I can honestly say, hand on heart, I have taken that advice. If people want to indulge themselves in your fantastic coaching, James, how can they find you?
Well, there's two ways of doing that. You can go to my website, which is jamespriest.com, or follow me on Instagram, which is jamespriestcoach. Do reach out and say hi to me on there. Thank you.
That's brilliant. And Laura, where can people find out more about you and find your book?
I'm also on Instagram, Twitter. I write a blog on Medium about relationships and parenting. And if anybody wants to reach out to me, I'm always delighted to hear from them. My book is available on audio and in Kindle and on, you know, in bookstores. It's in paperback now. So I love to hear from people. I always love to hear the journeys that other people are on and to give a little boost of confidence when I can.
Oh, that's wonderful. And it is a very good book as well. I've read that. It's fantastic. So thank you both so much for your time and your energy with this today. It's been a really fascinating discussion. You can find about a bit more about me on Twitter at Kate_Daly. And you can hear about new podcast episodes by following at @divorce_podcast. And if you've enjoyed this episode and want to listen to more of the Divorce Podcast, please follow us on thedivorcepodcast.com. Thank you so much for your time, guys. And thank you all for listening.